From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Block in Washington.
And I'm Madeline Brand in California, where many prisons have been on lockdown this week after a riot by inmates at one facility. More than 175 people were injured. It could not have come at a worse time for California's troubled and overcrowded prisons. The state is spending more than it can afford on prisons, and it has the highest recidivism rate in the country.
It wasn't always this way. NPR's Laura Sullivan spent a couple of days at California's historic Folsom Prison. She reports on how a state that was once the national model in corrections became the model every state is trying to avoid.
Hello, I'm Johnny Cash.
It was January 1968. Johnny Cash set up his band on a makeshift stage in the cafeteria here at Folsom Prison.
I hear the train a-coming.
Half the prison's inmates watched him play, thumping their fists and cheering from the same steel benches now bolted to the floor.
I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
This morning that Cash played may have been the high watermark for this prison and for the California Department of Corrections. These men lived alone in their own prison cells. Almost every one of them was in school or learning a professional trade. The cost of housing them barely registered on the state budget. And when these men walked out of Folsom free, the majority of them never returned. It was a record no other state could match. Things have changed.
Drug activity, gang activity, it's kind of like a pressure cooker.
Lieutenant Anthony Gentile is standing in Folsom's cafeteria just before lunch, beneath chipping paint, rusting pipes, and razor wire, where a photographer stood 40 years ago and captured Cash's famous concert. An officer now stands in a metal cage.
He's armed with a Mini 14, which is the primary weapon, our last use of force option for lethal force. He has a 40 millimeter exact impact round, and then he has a 38 caliber revolver as his personal defense.
There are now 15 to 20 assaults a week here at Folsom. And where all inmates used to mix, Folsom today is entirely segregated in the cafeteria, on the yard, and in the cell blocks by race.
The problems tend to simmer and stay there. It creates somewhat of the mob mentality.
Folsom was built to hold 1,800 inmates. It now houses 4,427 men. Its once vaunted education and work programs have been cut to just a few classes, with waiting lists more than 1,000 inmates long. Officers are on furlough. Its medical facility is under federal receivership. And like every other prison in this state, 75% of inmates who are released from Folsom today will be back behind bars within 3 years. To figure out how California could have gotten to such a place, you first have to start in Sacramento.
Honestly, I was very hopeful when I went up there.
Gene Woodford was one of four secretaries the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation has had in the past 5 years. Woodford spent 30 years in the department. As secretary, she lasted 2 months.
I thought it was all about the right policies and the right principle. It's really about the money.
California can't afford its prisons. Taxpayers are already spending as much money locking people up as they are in the state's entire education system. Experts agree the problem started when Californians voted for a series of get tough on crime laws in the 1980s. The population exploded immediately from 20,000 inmates throughout the 70s and 80s to 170,000 inmates. Gene Woodford was warden of San Quentin at the time.
The violence just went out of control. And then the program started going away. And then I was there during an 18-month lockdown. It was just unbelievably horrific.
California wasn't the only state to toughen laws in the throes of the 1980s crack wars. But Californians took it to a new level. Increased parole sanctions, prison time for nonviolent drug offenders. Voters eliminated indeterminate sentencing, removing any leeway to let inmates out early for good behavior. Then came 1994's Three Strikes, You're Out. Even offenders who had committed a minor third felony, like shoplifting, got life sentences. Voters were inundated with television ads, pamphlets, and press conferences from their governor, Pete Wilson.
Three strikes is the most important victory yet in the fight to take back our streets.
Behind the efforts to get voters to approve these laws was one major player, the Correctional Officers Union. In three decades, it has become one of the most powerful political forces in California. It has contributed millions of dollars to support three strikes and other laws that lengthen sentences. It donated $1 million alone to Governor Wilson after he backed three strikes. And the result for the union has been dramatic. Since the laws went into effect and the inmate population boomed, the union grew from 2,600 officers to 45,000 officers. Salaries jumped from $15,000 in 1980 to today, where one in every 10 officers makes more than $100,000 a year.
We have advocated successfully for our members.
Lance Corcoran is spokesman for the union, the California Correctional Peace Officers Association.
The notion that we are some prison industrial complex, or that we're recruiting felons or trying to change laws, is a misnomer.
Campaign records, however, show much of the funding to promote and push for the passage of the laws came from a political action committee the union created. It's run out of a group called Crime Victims United of California. Its director, Harriet Solarno, says they are independent from the union, but a review of the PAC's financial records show the PAC has not received a donation from another group besides the union since 2004. The union's Lance Corcoran.
We continue to support a number of victims' rights groups.
Why is the Correctional Officers Union involved in victims' rights at all?
There are people that think that there's some sort of ulterior motive, but the reality is we simply want to make sure that their voices are heard, and so we support them with everything that we can.
But Corcoran acknowledges the union has benefited from the increase in the prison population after these laws passed.
We've had the opportunity to grow, and that has brought with it success and criticism.
The union is incredibly powerful.
Jean Woodford said she stepped down as secretary of the Corrections Department when she found out the union had been going behind her back to negotiate directly with the governor's office. Secretary Roderick Hickman resigned for the same reason in February 2006.
The biggest problem was the relationship that I had with CCPOA, the union.
Hickman says the union was able to undermine efforts to divert offenders from prison and reduce the prison population.
Maybe I was just impatient, it wasn't going to go fast enough, but I think that they're still in the same place. I left it with an $8 billion budget, and now it's an over $10 billion.
Today, 70% of that budget goes to pay salaries and benefits to the union and staff. Just 5% of the budget goes to education and vocational programs, the kind study after study in the past 10 years has found will lower the prison population. The mill and cabinetry workshop at Folsom feels different from the rest of the prison when you walk through the metal doors. Here in the shop on this day, a group of black, white, and Latino inmates are bent over a table, talking to each other, discussing measurements for a conference table. Inmate Derek Poole is working on the legs.
When we down here, we can get out of that prison politic game where we don't get along, we don't socialize outside of race. We socialize within the race here.
Poole spending 9 years at Folsom for drug possession. In his life, he's been released from prison at least six times that he can remember. It hasn't worked out well.
When I got out, you kind of lose your social skills, like dealing with people. You already wasn't learning on the street, and then you come in here, you're not learning. So now your mind is even more hollow, more empty.
Poole got very lucky this time, beating out hundreds of others to land a spot among just 27 inmates. When he's done, he'll be an accredited woodworker with his GED. Most of the men in Folsom won't be so fortunate. Just across from the cabinetry shop, program administrator Jean Bracey sits in her makeshift office next to the welding class. She knows the statistics by heart.
I have 1,797 inmates that read below the ninth grade level. 394 of those read below the fourth grade level. When we put them back out on the streets, they're not employable.
And back on the streets is where 85% of all of California's inmates are going one day when their sentences run out. Bracey's only got a handful of vocational programs left, enough to reach less than 10% of Folsom's inmates. And the state plans to cut even that in half in the next few weeks.
I think this is the worst I've ever seen it.
It only costs her about $100,000 to run these programs. Not even a blip in a $10 billion a year prison budget.
It's just not cost effective to throw men and women in prison and then do nothing with them. And shame on us for even thinking that that's safety. It's not public safety. You lock somebody up and you do nothing with them. They go out, not even equal to what they came in, but worse.
The numbers bear that out, with 90,000 inmates returning to California's prisons every year. Compare that to the Braille program here at Folsom, just above the administration building, where inmates learn to translate books for the blind. In 20 years, not a single inmate who has been part of the program has ever returned to prison. This year, the program's been cut back to 19 inmates. Out on the prison yard, one of the old-timers, an inmate named Ed Stewart, or Lefty, sits in an old chair in the only bit of shade on the dusty dirt field. He watches the inmates stand in groups by their race.
Nowadays, you know, the kids are just coming through it like a little merry-go-round, like there's nothing to it.
Most of the inmates here on this yard aren't here for serious or violent crimes. The number of inmates in California's prison for murder, assault, or rape has been relatively unchanged in two decades. The difference is this yard is now packed with drug dealers and drug users, shoplifters who stole something worth more than $500, car thieves. All across this prison are signs of what this place once was, when administrators came from New York and Texas to find out how Folsom kept its violence so low and its inmates from coming back. There's a deserted shop where inmates used to train to be butchers. Its thriving medical facility shuttered. And hovering above the prison, China Hill, a now barren field where inmates once trained to become landscapers. The prison can't afford to pay the teacher. Warden Michael Evans can see it just outside his office. Its meaning is not lost on him.
I have a dog, and I put them in a cage, and I beat them regularly. Ultimately, they will bite me when I open that door.
Evans says after three decades working in corrections, he's come to one conclusion.
I think that prison should be a place where an individual has the opportunity to change if they choose to, and we move forward from there.
For now, California is at a standstill, unable to find the money to move forward with a different strategy, unable to move backward to a time when it didn't need one. Laura Sullivan, NPR News.
You can see photos of Folsom Prison at npr.org, our newly redesigned website.